The planet's puppet masters almost surely have a plan. There's clearly maybe something there beyond the realm of man. And until you've thoroughly tested every last close trusted view, I find the more you think you know, the less you really do.
That's true, Dr. Zaius.
Well.
Where would we be without THC? Cause we know they're lying to us, just don't know.
All right, folks, we're no stranger to the ET abduction scenario, as anybody with an interest can pore over countless cases stretching back decades and even centuries. But a lesser talked about phenomenon are the military abductions, or MILABs, where Shadow State and Black Ops groups follow up on genuine ET experiences with their own simulated abductions and interrogations. And shining a spotlight on this slice of the pie can be even more insightful when we try to get a grip on the big picture, because we get indications of who knows what, who's working with who, and what the deeper motivations might be behind all this high strangeness. Well, today's guest, Melinda Leslie, is just the person to talk to, because not only has she had her own lifelong string of occasional encounters with these beings, and of course about 8 MILAB follow-ups that she can recall, she's also interviewed over 100 fellow experiencers and as a result has a pretty well-educated opinion on some of the major commonalities and possible agendas. But that's not all, folks. She also leads night vision goggle-clad UFO tours in the desert of Arizona with a near-perfect sighting record, as well as being a medium and psychic who specializes in connecting with one spirit guides. You've seen her on TV and conferences around the country, as well as heard her on Coast to Coast and all the other major hubs of weird, and it's an honor to have her here today. Melinda Leslie, welcome to the Higher Side.
Thank you, Greg. Thank you for having me.
Well, thanks so much for being here. This is really exciting. As you know, I recently had Robert Guffey on to talk about his book Camellia, which details a case of military gang stalking and electronic harassment here in San Diego. And as we got deeper into things like MILAB experiences and eerie corporate connections here in town, your name came up as the real go-to person to find out more. So this is a real treat for me. But to start this off, I've heard MILAB experiences described in a couple of different ways. That the Shadow State is doing all this to try to play catch-up and investigate the genuine abduction phenomenon. That the UFO experiences of the past few decades were just a cover, and that it's been military the whole time. And of course, the third option, that they're working together. So to clarify, give us a better idea of how you define the MILAB experience.
Well, first off, I'll let people know I don't like that term.
Right. I did know that.
And the reason is I think it's extremely limiting. It leads one to think that it is all military or that the only people involved in this are military. And so it really falls short from even coming close to describing it. It's any covert human organization involved in the alien abduction scenario. And it's also come to mean things that have stuff going on that has no relationship to alien abduction. In my research, I focus on people who've had alien or extraterrestrial abductions who then get targeted by covert human agencies. Now, sometimes these agencies are military as far as they have military uniforms and their military bases and et cetera, and military equipment. And sometimes they seem to be more like covert human organizations like intelligence organizations and offshoots of that. I mean, that's not just one body. It's like a huge octopus with multiple arms. So there can be multiple branches and groups within groups and that kind of thing. And it's extremely compartmentalized. And you can be having involvement with more than one group or more than one aspect of that at one time. And again, on my research, I choose to limit it to, because otherwise it gets just too big, too broad, too much into various mind control subjects and whatnot. And that's all well and good. And certainly I come across research, but I really choose for mine to have a very specific focus of people who've had alien abduction or, you know, extraterrestrial abduction who then get targeted. Mm-hmm. And it's because they're very real abductees. Now, with what you're just saying where, oh, some people say it's all military. Well, that rules out all the experiences where people are seeing military and ETs combined.
Right.
And I think one of the other things you said is it's all one of the theories is that they're investigating it. Well, no. Mm-hmm. No, they're working with them, and they're actually a whole bunch of things are going on. But one of the things, kind of like down the road in the experiences, if you start to have this, it starts one way, kind of ramps up. I actually, in my presentations, I showed this diagram I made of like a curve, you know, going along, and then, you know, like a kind of like a bar chart, you know, but mm-hmm. a curved line going up. And I say it starts like this, and then it escalates. And at any point, you can repeat any portion of that. But the thing I have it escalating to way down the road is people being recruited into these programs to participate themselves. And there's a whole string of programs that people get recruited in. Everything from things that fall under the category of secret space program to things that fall under the category of mind control to things that fall into the categories of time travel programs. And of course, the Psi paranormal programs, you know, and those are just some of them, you know, so you get into any one of those programs. Oh, and another one would be ET communication programs where you're used as a communicator with ETs. And then another program might be to become a perpetrator of the MyLabs. And so some of the guys who are doing MyLabs started off as abductees and got recruited.
Hmm.
Often those people then at some point had a military or intelligence background. So that combined with being the abductee, you know, and that's just it. Your chances of having the MyLab stuff goes up exponentially depending on your background, your family's background, and a variety of things.
Right.
As we know, alien abductions runs in families. That has been long proven in abduction research that if you're an abductee, you find it happened to your parents, you have kids, it happens to them. I mean, three generations is common, like almost all abductees realize that there's a third generation thing. Mm-hmm. Now, it, for a long time, there's been a lot of fourth generations. Now we're even starting to see fifth generation. So we realize that this goes back in families. And then as an abductee, when you have kids, it goes forward in your family, you know. So, and we know that. Well, it's also true with the MyLab experience. It often runs in families as well.
Hmm.
Much for the same reason. If they're following you as an abductee, they may have followed your parents. The reason you're probably being targeted is your parents already had involvement. And there starts to be these patterns like people's parents were maybe in intelligence in some way, in not just military, because, you know, people probably your age and my age and, you know, or certainly anyone who's maybe 30 and older or certainly 50 and older for certain is going to have parents that were probably in the military, at least a father that was.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because of World War II or Vietnam.
Right.
And, you know, it's just so prevalent. But so military alone doesn't necessarily mean anything. But if they were higher level military, if they were officer, if a parent or a close relative was in the intelligence community, was in the aerospace community, again, particularly if they're higher level, if they were deep into secret society stuff. So these are the things that start to add up. And a lot of these MyLab cases go ding, ding, ding on multiple combinations of that.
Right.
And it could be, you know, because of that parent or that grandparent is why they watch for what was going to happen to the kids, you know. And if you end up being extremely intelligent, if you end up being extremely, you know, psychic or have paranormal abilities, if you end up being an alien abductee, you could get targeted and recruited. And often that's the same series of events that happens for people who get taken into a mind control program. Even if it has seemingly nothing to do with anything extraterrestrial, it seems to be that it's recruited and again, it runs in families. Well, same with this. It's kind of like they're using the same, I don't know what I'm trying to say.
Template. Yeah.
The same. Yeah. Perfect word. Perfect word. Mm-hmm. I, a lot of words were starting to come up, but that's the perfect word. The same template for finding these individuals and using them, et cetera, et cetera. Now, a lot of times, some abductees just have really low-grade, harassment, surveillance stuff.
Yes.
And they kind of, and it can stop. In other words, there may be where they start to kind of monitor you, like, are we interested in this person? Do they know enough about their experience? You know, are, do they have the things we're looking for? And if not, then that can kind of happen and then it kind of dies off. So I know a lot of abductees who had a certain amount of stuff and then that it just ends there. But like I said, then it can ramp up to the next thing and the next thing and the next thing. And before you know it, you're going up this curve where you end up in a psi program, an alien communication program, the secret space program, you know?
Right, right.
You go that far. Or you become a perpetrator. I mean, to meet that a woman who's a perpetrator, I'm sure they must exist. But so far, I've met a few guys, and in every case, they started out being alien abductees.
Well, if you can't beat them, join them, you know?
Well, no. No, I can tell you this. The usual case is that it is against their will. The usual case is it's in still like an abduction-related scenario. They're under mind control. It's not something they made a choice to participate in. In with a few of them, yes, they made a choice. And it usually became because they were recruited into secret operations, often military-related or intelligence-related, usually out of the military. So those guys that were in the military or in the intelligence community who then get recruited, but also happen to be alien abductees. Some of them, it's a choice in their participation. Mm-hmm. But I've met guys that it is done in an altered state under drugged or hypnosis or so it's seemingly the same kind of event like an abduction event, except for they're used as a perpetrator. And that's really, really unfortunate. So I think they want your cooperation, but they're going to use you whether they get it or not, maybe.
Right.
Unfortunately, you know. And I mean, I know this sounds pretty dark, but it can be. And I've unfortunately come across all this to go, okay, that's where I started to come up with this pattern of this, you know, ramping up in someone's life. And it can start really low grade. And interestingly enough, you know, even on my timeline, I don't have that it starts with the alien abduction. You know, on this line, I have a couple things before that on the timeline, if you will, of how it can ramp up. For instance, what makes you an alien abductee can go back in your family, as we just said. So it can be family involvement in any of those programs that I mentioned. It can be, and like I said, in the secret society stuff. It can also be involved in the aerospace engineering program or NASA or, you know, or the intelligence community or high level military or any combination thereof, you know, but as those things go back, so that can all exist long before you ever realize or even have an alien abduction. And of course, alien abductions themselves can go back in your family. And then there's a historical pattern going back even into not to make a cheap connection here, but I mean this very seriously because they've actually addressed it on the show Ancient Aliens, where they've addressed not only, well, of course, it's all about the historical connection, but they've even gotten back to the elite and those in power and those in military and those in intelligence going back in history were involved in this. Mm-hmm. You know, they've addressed that a couple times. So you go, okay, this goes way back. But for the individual, it can go back in your family. Not only just the alien abduction, of course that can, but also these other things, these other areas of involvement. And so all that can pre-exist. And then even as an abductee, often you start to have some kind of communication with ETs before you have a physical abduction. Now, most abductees, it starts in childhood. So it's real hard to pinpoint that. But in mm-hmm. a few cases where maybe it started a little later in life, there was some involvement. It's very common for an abductee, or at least that involvement is what causes you to then realize you've had this all along. Like with me, I didn't find out I had alien abductions till 1989, but it turned out I had had them my whole life.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out once I start doing all this research, of course, my own dad and my own family, I start checking off those things.
Mm-hmm.
But I was coming up for other people, and I just start go, well, do I have that? Oh, shit, yeah, I do. Pardon my language. But
no worries. One thing that's interesting
Internet's like cable TV and cuss.
Absolutely, absolutely. We are like HBO here. Say whatever the hell you need to say. What's interesting about the family lines thing is that so many of us who aren't involved in it or just, you know, are enthusiasts in it, a lot of people want some kind of verification that these things happen. And since we know the exact families that are being taken, it seems like we should be able to monitor those people and catch them in the act in some regard. Has that ever been attempted?
No, we're not that far down the road. There's a lot of things, even in alien abduction research, there's so much that can be done. And I used to joke with Bud and John Mack and Dave and stuff. Dave's still alive, but the other two are passed, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And I involved very much with Yvonne Smith and Barbara Lamb and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Kathleen Martin. But there's kind of this thing like it's, we're so caught up in triage. It's all about helping the traumatized abductee figure out, is this really going on? What's going on? You know, is there physical evidence, and helping them come to terms with it and getting them in some kind of support. Mm-hmm. That's where it keeps just cycling through.
Agreed.
We're not getting beyond that in the research because it's so much about trying to help that person and help that person integrate it into their life and live with it and feel supported and feel whole and feel healed that we're always in triage.
Yeah.
And so to do a lot of the research that could be done on it, it's very tough. Now, occasionally, just when things start to get motivated to kind of maybe do that research, somebody passes away, someone has something other traumatic happen in their life, and, you know, I mean, like a researcher passes away, or someone has trauma or something, you know, in their own personal life, unrelated, and they're caught up doing that or whatever. So, like, you could think of like the MIT study that happened years ago. Wow, we're starting to make some real headway and get some real information, some real research, and then it's dead in the water, you know?
Right.
And just for a million reasons. Occasionally, there's things even now where organizations are trying to say, let's take this to the next level and do some more research and get some more data. And one of the organizations doing that I'm very proud to be a part of, I'm not on their primary board. I'm kind of just a consultant to them, but I really support what they do, is called FREE, F-R-E-E, which is the Dr. Edgar Mitchell Foundation for Research into extraterrestrial encounters. Mm-hmm. There we go. But Dr. Edgar Mitchell was one of the founders and on the board of it until his, unfortunately, you know, recent passing. Mm-hmm. But he was involved in it, and kind of the managing director, kind of managing the business of it, is a guy named Ray Hernandez. And it has, I mentioned, Kathleen Martin, and it has a whole, she's on the board, but a whole list of scientists and some physicists even on the board.
Right.
So it's trying to really come about it from a very kind of a pragmatic, grounded, yet they're all people who are also involved in consciousness study and research. And so they're also looking at it from the consciousness angle and from a spiritual angle. And that's really nice that it's like they're no stone unturned. You know, they're willing to consider all the angles, all the aspects because of how complicated it is. And they're starting off with doing these surveys that people can go online and take these surveys that help you both determine how much you're having happen and if you're an abductee or a contactee. And then it goes, and then the surveys get more involved. Now, they had me put together a complete my lab-related survey for them, covert involvement survey, a whole series of questions. That's kind of on hold because they're still getting the results and trying to do the science and the statistics on the initial surveys. But they tell me down the road they do want to use that. Now, even in their second survey, my lab-related questions, but kind of what spurred me on to really work with them is I thought, I mean, I'm glad that they asked anything and that they thought to include anything is wonderful, but they asked the wrong questions. So they're getting a very small percentage because the questions weren't the right questions. It was like, have you been abducted by the military? Well, okay, that's limiting it to military, and it's limiting it to only the times where you're physically removed by humans. You know?
Right, right.
And it's like, no, wait. They didn't even ask the question, have you been abducted by ETs and seen humans in military outfits or people in lab attire or people in suits present in the scene, you know?
Right. You got to be very careful with your wording.
Yeah, exactly. So Even with that, though, I think they said they were getting about a 10 or 12% return from, and that's out of thousands of people taking this thing. So that's still pretty high numbers. Now, that's not the only question they asked, but all the questions were kind of predicated on that idea. And so, you know, so even then they're getting, you know, 10, 12% response, which is pretty high
for, yeah,
you know, out of abductees. And when they start asking the right questions, I highly suspect it'll be at least a 40% response.
Wow.
It could be as high as 60%
when
they ask the right questions with some of the other related questions. So that's why I developed that for them. And I look really forward to when they start using that and have it be a place where we can really get some real numbers on this,
yeah,
to see how much it's really involved.
That will be nice. So another aspect I'm interested in is I've heard you talk about this pattern of equations or advanced math or formulas being communicated or shown to abductees. And that's really interesting because that also comes up in other areas of strange contact, like beings encountered on psychedelics. Can you elaborate on that angle at all? This is what the MILLABS groups are after in at least some cases, right?
Good question. In some cases, yeah. I'll say this. In my research, I kind of have it in five. I have to do this off the top of my head because I admit I don't have any notes in front of me. So you guys, this is all just, I've just done this for so long, it's in the brain. So I have to go through that file, you know, rifle through the files, pull that one out. Okay, there we go. Okay, there's five major things that they're interested in from the abductees. One is alien agenda and motives. So like, what do you know about the alien agenda? What do you know about their motives? What are they really doing? Why are they producing the hybrids to the degree that they are? We can get more into that if you want.
Mm-hmm.
Why are they picking you up? Do you know why they're involved with you? Do you know why they might be involved with your family? Have they told you what their agenda is or their motives? And so that's category one. Category two is psi ability. They're looking for the psi ability in the abductee. Psi being, of course, the psychic, the paranormal abilities. Do you do remote viewing? Do you do psychokinesis? Do you do telepathy? You know, et cetera, et cetera. So those kinds of things, you know, they're, and then they'll test you in those abilities and try to determine what you have. And how much have you learned that from the ETs? Has it been enhanced by the ETs? Which gets us also to the next category, which is genetics. So why are they interested in you genetically? Is there something different about your genetics? Have you been altered? Are you a hybrid to whatever degree, you know, little or a lot or anything in between? Have you been affected and changed genetically? And is there something different about your genetics? That kind of thing. And all these things cross correlate. You can see, because as I just took that out of the psi thing, there's a genetic component to the psi part. And then there's a genetic component, obviously, to the alien agenda and motive. So, you know, all these things it's very hard to separate them because they're all intertwined.
Mm-hmm.
But okay. So the first being agenda and motives, the second being your psi abilities, the third being your genetics or anything different about you genetically. And if it's happening to your kids, why them too? Blah, blah, blah. Okay. And then the next would be mind control. And I'm going to put the one you brought up last, but these aren't in a particular order. If anything, I would say the technology one might be second after alien agenda and motives. But so, you know, this order doesn't mean anything. These are all equal in significance to them. But the next being mind control. How much have you been controlled or influenced by the aliens? And what can we practice or learn from your mind control? And can we develop our mind control? I mean, we mean, you know, the covert guys, you know, can they develop the mind control techniques and abilities and stuff? So you become a useful target, guinea pig and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where there's so much bleed over into those areas. And then, of course, then last but not least, the fifth one, which might actually be second really in importance, is technology.
Mm-hmm.
So it gets into a bunch of different aspects of technology. Have you been shown technology by the ETs? Have you been shown navigation systems, propulsion systems, weapon systems, structural architectural systems? Have you been shown alien languages? And this gets into the formula things now, alien math, formulas, alien science, you know. So how much technology information have they given you like that? And really, Next to agenda and motives, I think this is the thing that they seem to be most interested in.
Right.
And in my case, now maybe I'm a little bit jaded because in my own experience, that's what they wanted, you know, and some of the other things too, but that was, you know, predominantly.
Are there any other details you can give us about the technology that people are shown in these experiences?
In alien abductions?
Right.
All sorts of stuff. Oh gosh, all sorts of, for instance, you mentioned formulas and stuff. So formulas, equations, math, some of these get very complex. Rarely does the abductee really understand anything that they're being shown.
Mm-hmm.
And this could be done where they're downloading this information and you start coming up with it in your dreams and in your journaling and your writing. I mean, I keep thinking as I'm talking about this, a very famous case for this involvement would be Stan Romanek, who would wake up in the morning and have his walls covered with these. He was writing them in the middle of the night and had no idea he was doing it. You know, these formulas, or on, you know, also on pieces of paper and stuff around, but on his door, on his walls, you know, other people have done that, you know, or they suddenly will start writing them. Sometimes you remember that you were shown it in the experience. And sometimes it's just like there in your brain and you're not sure where it came from. Sometimes it's done in kind of like in Stan's case, almost like automatic writing kind of thing, you know, in an altered state or during the night or something. Sometimes this is just downloading to your brain. Sometimes you're shown on board. I mean, I was shown some symbols and stuff on a screen. Now, not a lot. And I think it wasn't really necessarily intended for me. I think the aliens were doing something, you know, communicating with each other. And I just happened to see it in that particular case.
Interesting.
But so that's it. You know, were you shown it on a screen? Did they have you draw it or do something similar to working computer typing or something or on a computer screen with your finger, you know? So did they have you, you know, draw it or type it out in some way? And did they show it to you as some kind of 3D thing in the air? So all these things happen.
Mm-hmm.
And same with alien languages. So first that was all about like math and symbols and that kind of stuff, which can be numbers, symbols, all sorts of stuff and equations. And sometimes they'll visually show you kind of like a science experiment or something, you know. And then, like I said, languages, which can be letters or numbers, letters, words, you know, et cetera, sounds. And then some people get shown propulsion systems.
Mm.
They get shown how the craft works or flies or what drives it or, you know, drive mechanisms, propulsion systems, navigation systems.
That's interesting.
Sometimes it's shown to you like you're just being taught as if they're showing you a 3D thing or they're showing you an actual piece of equipment. And sometimes that abductee is sat at a control panel and they understand it's kind of a mock-up situation. No, you didn't just crash the ship that, you know, it was like driver's training or something, you know, but sometimes the abductee knows I'm actually sat at real controls. And sometimes that's like a control panel with knobs or buttons. And sometimes it's literally just a computer screen and everything in between. People get shown that. So navigation systems, like I said, propulsion, other mechanical systems. I mean, one abductee says they went into all this detail of how the doors on the ships work, you know, like passageways and doors. And she's like, I have no idea why they're showing all that to me, but, you know, and I think too, if you're an abductee and you show, first off, if you're the trick for, number one in abductions is learning to be conscious and present and not overcome by trauma or fear in the experience. And if you are extremely traumatic and fearful, they're going to shut you down.
Yeah.
And which is everything from paralyzation, immobilization to memory erasement, blah, blah, et cetera, et cetera. So you have to learn to have control and be conscious in the experience. And it can be learned, and many abductees do. And once you become present and conscious and free will in the experience, where you have an ability to interact, well, as soon as you show interest in one of those things, like if they start to show you and you're asking questions and you're involved and you're interested in it, well, they're going to show you more. So in her case, they might have shown her a door and she might have said, how's that work? And next thing she's in class on how the doors work, you know, but I'm just saying it could be like that, like showing interest. In my case, unfortunately, a lot of times I'm out of it and I'm not in the presence of mind or where I'm asking those things. But a few times I have, or when they've started to show me something, and that's those few times when I have been shown technology. I actually wish they would do that more.
Yeah, of course.
And it's only been a handful of times. And some abductees get it quite heavily, but maybe it's because a lot of times you're usually taken under duress, against your will, in an altered state. Its initial reaction is to have fear or some amount of panic, even if you know it's going to be okay. Just the high strangeness at the beginning, if you have the beginning, you know. And I think a lot of times they instantly kind of shut that down, so it's hard to get beyond that. Mm-hmm. So you know, it's a trick to learn. And a few times I feel like I've been able to remain fairly conscious and interactive, and other times not at all. And then there's the times where I didn't remember a darn thing without, I mean, it's some, people say, well, do you need a regression or do you remember consciously? It's not like that. You know, yeah, there are experiences I remember completely consciously, and there's experiences I remember only with regression. And there's a lot of experiences, maybe I remember 80% of it consciously, and then I get regression to fill in the details. Mm-hmm. But, you know, those ones that are fully conscious and I remember versus the ones that a lot of regression to get through. And I don't know why it was so blocked. And then is that me that's imposing that, or is that them that's imposing that? And we still don't know those answers. I think a lot of it is self-imposed. I think when a person gets in fear, because we know this. I mean, this is a known thing in psychology with people who've had traumatic experiences in their life. You're in a plane crash. You block it out. Mm-hmm. You know, you'll remember very few details. It's just, you know, there's a tendency for the brain to shut off that area, like, you know, like healing a wound or scar. It shuts it off, walls it off in the brain. I think because otherwise, when you do have those memories, you have severe post-traumatic stress and all sorts of trauma and stuff in your life that can lead to a million and one problems. Mm-hmm. You know,
yeah, it's a defense mechanism.
Psychological problems, drug, alcohol, you know, medical problems, mental problems, you name it. So I think there's a tendency for, we know that anyways, that the human mind does that. So of course it makes perfect sense that with this traumatic experience, it would do that as well.
Mm-hmm. Man, great answer. So time is really speeding by here.
My answers are short.
So to jump over to the MILLABS experiences, one of my major curiosities here, like I mentioned in that intro, is corporate involvement and this SAIC corporation in particular. What kind of details can you give us on that front?
Well, in all honesty, it's been a very, very long time since I've come across them. It was just some insiders and some meetings of some people in some of these covert monitoring abductees folks. Mm-hmm. I came across a bunch of them. There's a bunch of them that were connected to SAIC, or at least at one time.
Right.
I think it is lessened in its significance as when I came across it, I'm like, wow, what's this? All these people are connected. All these people are connected to a lot of things. That's just one of the organizations, you know? And it's not like SIC knows all about and is all involved. No, it's just a few perpetrators or people involved or people who are monitoring just happen to have a connection to that. Mm-hmm. And like I said, now it's other organizations. So its significance is standing out by itself has lessened over time. And I have not come across it in probably at least 10 years since I've even come across it as a continued connection. Now, some of those individuals are probably still involved with it, so therefore there would still be a connection because do they still have some connection to it? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But in other words, when I came across it was just, which is SAIC is what's, I'm trying to remember what the letters stand for, Strategic Science Application International Corporation?
Correct, right,
okay.
That's it.
Yeah, Science Application International Corporation. And it's just a, you know, corporate entity that does science research and stuff in San Diego. That name just popped up, you know, for me, like 15 years, not for a little while, with different people. Because at the time, I think they were involved with it. Now, not so much, you know. Mm-hmm. So that's it. But it's a good representation of how that can happen.
Yeah. I mean, everybody knows companies like Lockheed and Boeing and groups like DARPA are all part of this puzzle to some extent. But
yeah.
I'd assume there are some lesser known corporations or off the radar groups that have popped up.
Well, sure. Well, when you get into, for instance, okay, let's just take a subject like secret space program, because that's a good one that's related directly to what we're talking about.
Sure.
And so you go, okay, secret space program. Well, it ain't NASA doing it, because mm-hmm. then it's not secret, you know. So it's like, okay, well, who's doing this? How they farm stuff out? Well, even now, a lot of military stuff is, you know, you get military complex and you get military contractors, you know. I mean, you go out to Area 51 and the security is all handled by Wackenhut. Wackenhut's not the military. They're a contractor. So what happens with SAIC is they're a military contractor and they're a space contractor with other ones. So you get into these companies that are the subcontractors working for the shadow government, the covert ops, whatever you want to call it, mm-hmm. and breakaway civilization. Don't get me started on that. But those folks, they're the contractors to those, of which if you start digging, you will literally find 1,000 companies, you know, because mm-hmm. everything is handled by different subcontractors. So one time, and maybe currently, I don't even know, SAIC was one of those subcontractors. But I do know meetings there. There were also a couple meetings at another company in Georgia that keeps coming up. I'll think of their name in a second. Ah, shoot. I hate it when the brain doesn't work. I'm getting older as a bitch, man. Okay. I'll think of their name in a second, but another one in Georgia where people met, you know, so there's these companies that have been like a meeting place for some of these people for discussing whatever. And it was just because, you know, they were involved there and it was a current convenient place to meet, and you could meet secretly in a conference room, et cetera, et cetera. So again, that's just one of many I've come across. At the time, it seemed significant. And occasionally, like for, I guess Robert came across it, right? That's what you were saying and mm-hmm. used it in his book. Okay. Well, occasionally it resurfaces. The other one. So, there's multiple of these companies that will resurface and their name will pop up again because of some involvement or someone associated with them involved. So I'm never surprised when I keep coming up with all these various names and then they'll go away for a while and come back, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm not sure that he came, I'm not surprised that he came across a SAIC connection. Mm-hmm. And if he came to me and said, well, what about this company or this company? I'd probably go, oh yeah, those two, you know, I mean, I haven't heard all of them, you know, I've only heard a few here and there, but I'm not surprised when I hear.
Right. It's a revolving door and that's how they keep it a secret.
There's one in Georgia that comes up a lot. There's a well-known one in Texas that comes up a lot because of the people involved with it. I'll say one that keeps coming up in various ways. Bigelow Aerospace. There's one.
Mm-hmm.
That's more currently coming up than SAIC, you know, it happens to be some of the same individuals. So, and that's just one little group that's in MILABS and in alien abduction. There's this term that an abductee who is also very well known in the remote viewing field and teaches that and everything by the name of Angela Thompson Smith. She wrote a book called Diary of an Abduction. I don't have it in front of me, but I'm pretty sure I think that's the name.
Hmm.
I'm at home doing this and my books are all in my office at work. But Diary of an Abductee. And in that book, she talked about her own MILAB related experiences. And obviously MILAB, we haven't really addressed this, just is MIL for military and AB for abduction.
Right.
So it just means military abduction. And again, I hate the term, but I still use it because it's the term known by so many people. But going back to what I was saying about her, she coined a term in that book for individuals that were involved in keeping tabs on her, monitoring her, befriending her, and other abductees. And that term was minders, like someone's minding you. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I like the term because it just makes sense. It's you're being minded, you know, and someone's minding you.
Sure.
And it's just where these individuals get involved in your life to varying degrees. So outside of the abduction events, you could have these intelligence people, aerospace people, covert world, people who operate in covert projects on many levels will suddenly befriend themselves to you. And sometimes the abductee sees as, well, this is like a whistleblower providing me information, maybe confirming part of my experience. So it's not necessarily bad. Mm-hmm. I have a couple of these individuals, and I have over time, and they've kind of switched positions with each other. And I don't see it as something bad. I see it as, okay, I'm flagged, I'm of interest, so I renew that in a million ways, have been for a long time. So it's like, okay, so they're kind of keeping tabs on me. And yet I also kind of get fed some information. Of course, you take that with a grain of salt, and you don't instantly believe it, but you don't instantly disbelieve it. It's like, is this useful? But it usually fits my research or supports. Mm-hmm. So they're kind of, you know, they're leading you along by the nose. Yeah, but I admit that. And it's not, I'm not going to turn around and espouse something they say is the God's truth, because I'm not an idiot, you know, but at the same time, it's like, okay, so far it's helpful, it's interesting, and it's confirming of some stuff. She had that too. And she's also befriended or become very good friends with some of them.
Right.
Sometimes in the minder scenarios, there can be threats and warnings. Sometimes they get into very abusive relationships. Some people end up getting into romantic relationships with someone in that role. And those usually end very badly.
I can understand that.
Yeah. And now in my case, I've never gotten involved to my knowledge. Well, actually, I take that back. There was someone loosely involved that was almost a little romantic thing, but it was short lived and it's okay. But he was an insider and kind of a whistleblower for sure. This can happen. And I tell abductees, be leery, know the background of the person. If you start dating someone, what's their background? Even if you have someone who seems like they come from the corporate world as a whistleblower providing you information, think, well, why? Why are they? What is this leading to?
Right. A handler situation, perhaps.
A handler. And it could be towards eventually recruiting you. They're checking you out on a deeper level. I mean, if you flag that kind of involvement, you're way down the curve, as I say, you know, yeah. And so it's like, what's coming next? What do they want to get you involved with? And then you can either choose to say okay or no to something that you might be proposed to you, but be very cautious.
Yeah.
And some people get very paranoid when this starts to happen. And again, it can be very low grade. Like I was saying earlier, the MyLab involvement can start with just really basic harassment surveillance kind of stuff. And then can just slowly escalate and ramp up to more and more. And so it may not involve getting abducted by these covert humans or having covert humans present in an ET abduction. That may come later. And even if that happens, it doesn't necessarily move beyond that. So again, you could be anywhere along that curve of ramping up in your life and then have it stop. Mm-hmm. Or have it stop for a while and start up again. I mean, that happens for people. Or just keep repeating through the same cycle. Just as how much are they interested in you? How involved? Because if you think about it, these are groups and organizations. And if they are connected to something official as far as shadow government or covert ops or something, or military, well, they're spending time, energy, and money on you. And how much time, energy, personnel, and how much money are they going to spend on you depends on
how valuable
are you useful? Yeah, how valuable you are to them.
Right.
Exactly. Hmm. And so a lot of times they just check someone out and realize, nope, it's not what I want. Or that person's such a pain in the ass that we don't want to be involved with them. And I think that's happened to me a couple times because I'll get a little involvement, then they'll leave me alone for a long time. And I'm thinking, they're like, somebody goes, not worth it. Because they know anything they do to me, I'm going to go blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
And people say, well, how do I get them to leave me alone? And I go, I always tell people, if this starts happening to you, the best way to get them to leave you alone, go public and talk
about
it.
Start talking, yeah.
Become more of a hassle than you're worth.
So another element I want to talk about is getting back to technology just a little bit. A big part of the secrecy we're told is always that it has to do with the technologies involved, that these kind of technologies could put the energy companies out of business, all that kind of speculation. I've heard you talk about the idea that we're having a slow indoctrination to disclosure on some of these things. And that's interesting
absolutely.
Because this guy, This guy, Gordon White, he never ceases to blow my mind, but he's talked about some of the major trade agreements and things like the Trans-Pacific Partnership as potential evidence for this, that it could quite possibly be the legal and political framework for releasing some of this tech without losing control of it. Are there any things like that that you would point to suggest that this rollout is being prepared?
A part of me is like, where do I start? I mean, yeah, I'd like to hear what he's, I'm not familiar with his stuff, and it sounds like he might be really on it. So I should check that out. I admit, sometimes I just get so caught up in regular life that I'm not always progressing forward with the research in the way that I should. And again, triage. I'm usually helping people who've had experiences come to terms with, have they had any MyLab stuff? And if so, why? And, you know, it's just, sure, again, triage. So, right. But that's one area as far as someone who says, look, I think this is the framework for disclosure happening. I'm very interested. Of course, I know Bassett real well and follow his stuff. And right. I was following all the Greer stuff when he was doing disclosure.
Mm-hmm.
Not so much lately.
I know. He's into some weird stuff now.
Yeah. This guru I'm here to save you stuff is not working for me or for him.
Agreed. So if not the TPP, what are the things that are the clues that show you that there is some type of indication that there's disclosure coming?
Oh, God. Okay. I'll start with two things that stand out like sore thumbs.
Sure.
I'm not sure which to make number one. I'm going to start with the one I might have more trouble remembering once I start talking about the other. So I'll start with the one, which is, and maybe it's number two, but just so I don't spend so much time talking about the other that I don't talk about this. And the first one I'll say is the amount of whistleblowers and insiders coming out talking and saying, I was told to talk about this, which is right now rife and rampant in ufology and in the covert conspiracy worlds and everything. Everything from Basiago running for president to, you know, to everyone asking me about Corey Good all the time, you know, all these kinds of things. So I think I just think there's so many insiders coming out and talking, and pretty much all of them say, I'm being told to do this. I'm being allowed to say certain things. It's being encouraged. That there's some, and when you, you know, when you say the shadow world, it's not like one unanimous thought or body, you know, making decisions. It could be one group wanting some information out in direct face of someone else, another group who doesn't, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It could be, but in the case of so many of these individuals, all the people that Carrie Cassie's been interviewing, and I don't want to just start listing names, but I could off the top of my head just ramble off. And there's these, they're all just starting to talk about their involvement in these deep projects that are secret space program projects and technology development projects and psi development projects and, you know, all these various aspects of this subject. And they're saying, I'm literally being told to talk about this. And I think people miss that part of their message. Ooh, what do you think about this? Do you think he's really involved? And I go, you guys, are you listening to the fact that he keeps saying, you know, like Corey Good keeps saying, I'm being told to talk about this.
Right.
And therefore take a lot of what they say with a grain of salt. Are you really getting the truth? Are you getting what they want you to hear? And what are they leaving out? Now that person may have I've met Corey Good and had dinner with him and his wife. And I thought, and they talked all about their kids, and he was really down to earth. And I was pleasantly surprised to learn all that about. And then you go, okay, well, and he said, you know, I am being told to talk about this. And you go, okay. So he's saying what he can. He knows what he can't. I think he has good intentions. I don't think he has a lot of ulterior motives other than to say what he can. I think it's like therapy for him. I think that with a lot of these guys. I knew Bill Uhouse. He unfortunately has passed away, but I knew Bill Uhouse really well, and that was his whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And when he pushed it too far, he got shot. You know?
Right.
That didn't kill him, but he did, you know. And Corey Good knows what will get him hurt. I mean, these guys know what they can't say that's too much.
Right.
You know?
That was one of my questions for you is, there's definitely a sea change where they seem to be talking about a lot of stuff that wasn't previously talked about. But as far as those sensitive subjects that they seem to they're not supposed to go into, what do those subjects seem to revolve around as far as you've noticed?
I don't even know, because you don't know what you don't know. You don't know what they're not saying.
Right.
They're saying some pretty wild stuff.
Yeah. Corey Good talks about the inner earth stuff, which is fascinating to me.
Yeah. What's off the table? I don't know. Maybe. I don't think they're getting into a lot of why the ETs are really here stuff, the alien agenda and motive stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they're getting into that so much. I think they talk about the programs, but not why and what they're trying to do with those programs. So that's just my guess, but truth is, and then their thing is, I admit, I don't follow these guys that closely. You start hearing them and they just, it all just sounds like so much stuff. And you're like, how do you ever verify any of this? How do you know if it's true?
Right.
It just becomes noise after a while.
Exactly. Agreed.
And yet I could be missing something significant by not paying more attention to them. But I leave that to, obviously, David Wilcock and earlier I mentioned, Project Camelot and what Bill was doing and what Carrie was doing. You know, I leave to folks like that who follow it and say, okay, what are they saying now? What's different? How's this relate to what someone said before? And those people make a whole research community out of that. And great. That's good. I'm glad they're doing it. Then I don't have to, you know, and then I can, if I really want to know, can ask David Wilcock or Carrie Cassie and say, no, what do you think about this person? And did that sound like what this other personer said? Cause they'll go, oh yeah, la, 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 and all the cross correlation mm-hmm. because that's their research. Again, in my research, I'm still the poor abductees who are wondering what the hell's happening to them.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, I'm kind of stuck there, but I only have so much time and energy. I mean, I have a full life. And
of course.
And yet that needs to happen. A lot of people say, hey, Melinda, don't ever feel bad about doing that. That needs to happen. The abductee needs that spokesperson. I'm out there talking about the MyLab events happening to people.
Right.
And that, so that's my gig, if you will. And yet these people who do follow, again, you know, I think of Carrie Cassie, Dave Wilcock off the top of my head, who say we follow what these other people are saying and we cross correlate what they're saying. And I can think of, what's his name? Steve and then Tanya Manform and I forget the guy name she made the movie with. Packing for Mars, but so they're following what these guys are saying. So it's like, okay, there's enough people following that I know where to go get that data when I want to know it, yeah. Kind of thing. But again, for me personally, it starts to just be so much noise. You start hearing all these people and you're like, okay, this is all very interesting. I'm really like, where's the evidence? And I'm not saying they're not legit. I'm just saying, bring out the evidence. You're wasting my time. When I work with abductees, I help gather the evidence for their experiences.
And let's talk about some of that physical evidence, because you have talked about that. You've talked about not only implants, which most people have heard about, but other little indications that people's stories do check out. Can you tell us about some of those examples?
Yeah. Before we get into that, people might realize we might have left them hanging in what I think was the number one thing that tells us disclosure is coming. It is current topic politically right now in our presidential race.
Hmm.
Now, whether that means anything's going to come of it or not, I don't know. But every word these folks utter, well, not so much. I used to think every word they uttered was planned. I'm beginning to wonder. But having had said that, the information that John Podesta put out and the tweets that he put out in his last days of office working for Obama as, was he chief of staff for the White House and now being campaign director for Hillary and the comments that Hillary keeps making over and over again. You guys, the fact that this hasn't been said once, this is being said over and over and over, something's afoot.
Yeah.
What are they doing that? Why? She's making an issue of it. Is she really going to go look at it?
I doubt it.
Are they going to send up a smoke screen? You know?
I think she's just pandering to the internet community. I doubt that an insider like her would really expose much.
No, but you have to, that's easy to say, but you have to go back and realize their previous involvement, their previous questions, it's more serious than you think. And I think it's pandering to the internet means what? That's nobody. Come on. That's, you know,
well,
really.
We're talking about it.
Yeah. Okay. But I'm just saying, no, I don't think so. Not that much of the internet community even has an interest in the subject.
Okay.
When you go back to people she's connected with, the questions she's asked on the inside, the book she's read, how long her and Bill have been pursuing this. This isn't like, oh, I'm just going to do this right now because it's trendy and current. It's not brand new for her. This has been a 20-year gig for her, you know, and it's been behind the scenes. And what's interesting is it's suddenly come from behind the scenes to out in the open. Why bringing it out in the open, Hillary, all of a sudden when you've been secretly doing this for a long time? Not even secretly, you've been doing this with your friends and close associates and word's been leaking out, but now you're publicly stating it.
Mm-hmm.
When before you and Bill, when publicly asked, would dance around it or run away. Now you're publicly stating it. What's going on? And Podesta, come on, you guys, he was chief of staff of the White House saying his biggest regret is he didn't get that done. It's like something's afoot. And I don't know what that means. Is it we're being primed for some kind of smokescreen to deflect and say, oh, look, there's nothing to it after all.
Mm-hmm.
Why? The question, it's not that they're going to come out with disclosures. Why now? And what is their end game? That's what we got to ask. But I think something's afoot because it is current topic.
Right. I don't think they have much wiggle room left.
And I think the involvement of Tom DeLonge.
Right. Blink-182. Yeah. We're talking about maybe getting him on here.
Yeah. Well, I hope he can. but I think that's very curious. Who's talking to him and why? Do they think he's the voice of the young people? Why did they chose him? Yeah, I get why they chose him. He's the voice of the young people. I get it. But who's trying to set up the young people for whatever this agenda is? Why him? And who is he talking to? And why are they being so freely talking to him? Again, you guys, if he is really meeting with Pentagon officials and stuff like he claims, and I believe he is, I don't believe he's making that up. If he's really hearing the stuff that he is, and if you listen to what he's saying, oh, I totally agree with why they've done this. He sings their praises. They've done no wrong. There's nothing illegal. When you understand why, you will accept it too. And that to me sends up a tremendous red flag.
Right.
Because I'm like, wait a second. If this is the voice of the 20-something crowd, you know, the 15 to 25-year-olds, and this is the guy that's talking to them, and this is the message they're going to start putting out. Oh, there's nothing wrong. They've not done anything illegal. Everything's okay. It's all justified. There's been no policy of disclosure for completely justifiable.
Right. It's like they're setting us up for the idea of immunity, but I'm willing to give them immunity for disclosure. I'll make that trade.
Hello. Yeah, I find what he says curious and alarming.
Right.
But I'm going to pay attention because somebody's talking to him and why and what are they saying? And I'm looking for the day when he wakes up and the light bulb goes off and he goes, wait a second. Because, dude, you are being used. You're being had. You're being used. I hope you fully realize that. He may be just playing along. He seems like a smart guy, so he might just be playing along to see how far it goes.
Mm-hmm.
But if he turns tail on them
right,
and says, no, I'm not going to put out that message. But we'll see. I mean, we'll see. And I'm not sure what to make of it. I mean, the jury's still out. I haven't made up my mind. On many of these things, I haven't made up my mind, but they are curious. And his whole ball of wax. At the same time, Hillary and John Podesta are making those statements.
Yeah.
It's like something's afoot.
Well, I think in some way they don't have a lot of room left because a lot of these secret sciences and technologies have been quarantined, but yet people have stumbled on them more and more over time. Physics is only working with half a puzzle. So I think they have really no choice but to put this out to us, but try to get out in front of it so that they can profit like they've always profited.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it might be. Now we're just looking stupid, and so we got to come out with this. And, oh, another thing that's pressing that. So you have the whole Tom DeLonge thing. You have Podesta and Hillary and that whole thing. At the same time, part of what's pushing that is you have Putin pushing the button on it.
Right.
Putin is saying, I'm going to come out and do this if you guys don't. He's threatened that publicly in lectures like five times or something. If you don't do this, I'm going to. Our government's going, well, we can't let him do it first.
Right.
That would be a mess for a million reasons. For the whole world, that would be a mess. And so they probably realize we can't let him do this first.
Mm-hmm.
And if he's really pushing some of that threat, that could be driving some of it too. Because that to me, that tied directly in with what you're saying with the technologies are out there to move forward. And to really profit them, they got to start bringing everybody along.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're right. Because I don't think these folks ever do anything that isn't completely profit and financial gain based and driven.
Right. And well calculated too.
Yeah, exactly. You got it. I agree. I think you're on it.
Well, we're getting down to it. I know you're also going to be at Contact in the Desert coming up. It's a great event where I've actually gotten my hands on night vision goggles the past couple of years and saw a lot of odd stuff in the sky. So I have full faith in the idea of your UFO tours, but give us some details on what those are like. What are you seeing when you're looking out there in the night vision goggles?
Well, last night was tour number 574.
Wow.
So in 574 tours, only once did my clients feel they didn't have a sighting. The other 573 tours, The other 573 tours, my clients always thought they had sightings. And we see a variety of stuff. I always tell my clients, I don't know whether we're going to get 10 or 40 or 10 or 50. But, you know, I would think my clients last night would probably tell you that they saw 30 or so. So we always see a bunch of stuff. I educate everyone on planes, helicopters, shooting stars, and, of course, satellites. So you know all about when you're seeing those things, and you can rule those things out. So when you have things that stop, turn, change, and when I say things, predominantly what we're getting are lights at high altitude, predominantly.
Right.
On 15 of the tours, we've seen fully structured craft. Like 2 times were big discs, 6 times were big triangles, 2 times were big boomerang shapes, 1 time was a big teardrop shape, 1 time a big diamond, and 3 times we had big round spheres, like, you know, ball shape. But, and 2 times your classic UFO disc. And like I said, 6 times big triangles. Okay. But, and sometimes those have been 3 inches in diameter at arm's length. So you make 3 inches in diameter at arm's length, make that a solid object, take your hand down, you're trying something hovering right over you. And sometimes they've been maybe a quarter inch at arm's length.
Hmm.
But if we're seeing full structure, and so we've had triangles up high that are half an inch at arm's length, and we've had triangles that I had a professional pilot out one night who said it thought it was about 400 or 500 feet above us. 2 great big triangles that we thought were about 300 feet in diameter, only about 500 feet above us. In other words, right on top of us.
Yeah.
So, you know, so, but 15 times we've seen structured craft, and all the other times we're seeing lights at high altitude.
Right. That's what I've seen.
Occasionally we get great big lights, and my clients will go, oh my God, that's so close. That's so close. What shape is it? You know, what shape? And I'll say that shape is big light. Because it's not structure unless you can see structure. But we get big light a lot. But we also get lights at really high altitude. But things that stop, turn, change direction, wobble, zigzag, make right angle turns, make U-turns, shoot off into space. Last night we had a couple that as they took off out of the atmosphere, they were getting dimmer and smaller. You could tell that they suddenly were going 3 times faster, like they were going faster, 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 faster. And then they go shoop, and shoot out like, you know, like streak out.
Mm-hmm.
It's always a combination. We also get things that fly in formations. Not last night, but night before last, we had a triangle of three separate objects flying in a triangle formation. And we also had that happen about 7 nights ago. We had, oh my God, we had a good triple. Oh my God, it was so good. It was coming from the southeast straight towards us, 3 separate objects. You could see stars between them, and they're kind of a distance apart, you know, but perfect equilateral, perfectly evenly spaced from each other. All of a sudden, the one in the front starts dropping to the left, and the other two kind of behind us, was like one in the front, two in the back, I guess. They start turning and keeping that exact shape. They do this U-turn, so they'd come up from the southeast, and they took off due east. And they just kind of did this big arcing U-turn and took off due east, holding that. And as they flew away from us, they then were starting to go up and out of the atmosphere because they were getting smaller, dimmer, and closer together all at the same time, meaning they were holding that exact formation. But as it flew out away from us, they got not only dimmer, tinier, but much closer together. And they were like tiny, really close together before they finally completely disappeared. So they had made a big U-turn and then took off for space holding that exact formation. It was just a perfect textbook triad, you know, just awesome. In fact, I had 2 clients with me that night, a couple who are making a documentary, and they're going to be at Contact in the Desert interviewing and filming people with the documentary for Contact in the Desert. Like they're officially doing it in conjunction with Contact in the Desert. And whether it's a documentary just about that or a documentary about current ufology, and they're just going to do a big part of that. But if anyone out there is going to be at Contact or is a speaker there or anything, you're going to meet these guys, this lovely couple. I think he's from Brazil. And they were the ones I had out there who got to see that. So I'm sure I'm actually looking forward to seeing them at Contact and being able to go, man, you guys, that triangle we saw, that was so good. I mean, it wasn't a solid structure craft. It was 3 objects in formation. When I say we've seen triangle structure craft 6 times, that's solid structure.
Yeah. So why do you think Sedona is such a hotspot outside of military presence? Do you think there's natural reasons why the environment might be such a hotbed for this activity?
Oh, gosh. Okay. Sedona's always been a hotspot for sightings. there are places in the world that will be hot spots for like days, you know, like all of a sudden there'll be a sighting wave. A sighting wave can last days. It can last weeks. It can last months. It can last years. Then there are places on the planet that are true hot spots, meaning there's like sighting waves there for epochs of time where like 1,000 years mm-hmm. reported or since, you know, since the beginning of recorded time. And so there are these places on the planet that are always known for having sightings all the time. Sedona is one of those. Northern Arizona is one of those. And the leading theory as to why Sedona is this hot spot for epochs of time is our vortexes, which are these increased electromagnetic fields spiraling up from the ground. And that's why. But Sedona and Northern Arizona and the Four Corners area is all a big hot spot. And as well as, you know, many places in the world. I could go on listing them, but there's a lot of these places. And they're all places that are known as places of power, these places with these large increased electromagnetic fields. And so just like those other places in the world with increased electromagnetic fields are hot spots for epochs of time, so is Sedona. And then there's kind of two schools of thought. We don't really know why, but there are two schools of thought. One is they're getting some kind of energy from it. Maybe. I'm not a big proponent of that, but I can't say who, you know, what do I know? Maybe. And then the other is that they're using them as navigation beacons. They're like coming into Earth's atmosphere. I had an engineering guy one night come out of my tour who said, what if their anti-gravity navigation system is just locking on to these electromagnetic fields? Their navigation system being electromagnetic is locking on to these electromagnetic fields. And that's why when they come into Earth's atmosphere, they come into these places of power and then maybe redirect from there. And I said, man, that makes perfect sense. mm-hmm. So I think that made perfect sense. So that's what I think they're doing.
Yeah, that is intriguing for sure. I mean, that pretty much does it for us, Melinda. This has been really insightful. I appreciate you sharing all this research with us. Are there any links or contact information you'd like to give people before we call it a wrap?
So the best way to get a hold of me to access all my information is to go to my website, ufosightingtours.com. And when you go to ufosightingtours.com, you scroll down, I got videos. There's a little brief bio down the page a ways, and that bio has links in it, and that'll take you to all my stuff, basically.
Awesome. Well, have a great time at Contact in the Desert, and hopefully I can end up on one of those UFO tours eventually. But
hey, come to Sedona. I mean, you know, there's a million reasons to come to Sedona. Of course, my tours being one of them.
Right.
But there's Sedona is a destination. It's an amazing location. It's very spiritual. It's very healing, very metaphysical. We're also an incredible outdoor enthusiast, hiking and dirt bike destination, as well as an art community destination. So come to Sedona. Come on my tour. I'd love to take you.
Right on. It's not too far, so I will do that.
And anyone coming to Contact in the Desert, make sure you come up to me and say hi. I'm going to be running two free night vision experiences there at the location on Friday and Saturday nights. And then Sunday night, a paid one where we're going to go out to Giant Rock, but you'll have goggle use the entire time. You won't have to, at the other ones, you're going to have goggles for like 5 minutes at a time. Every 15 minutes, you might give them for 5 minutes.
Right.
So you might have 3 or 4 5-minute segments in a 3-hour period, you know, blah, blah, blah. But you'll get to look. But when we go out to Giant Rock on Sunday night, that's a paid event, but you'll have goggles usage the whole 2 hours that you view. I mean, we'll be out there for like 3, but 2 hours of viewing, you'll get goggle usage the whole time.
Yeah, it's definitely worth doing. I've looked into getting goggles myself, but man, they are so expensive. The ones I've seen are like $10,000. So I can understand.
Oh, no. Gen 3s right now are ranging between about 3,600 and 4,600. Maybe it's more like 38 and 4,800.
Damn.
But they're good. Gen 3s are in that range. You can get souped up Gen 2s for like 2,500, but I actually don't recommend it if you're serious about really doing this all the time. But some people say those are pretty good. I'm not a big fan, but some people say they're good. And I hear that they're getting better, so maybe I'll be turned around on it. But I use Gen 3s. I get ones that would retail right now for about $3,800. I admit I have a contact. I get them for less than that. But that's what I use on the tour.
Right on. Very cool. All right. Well, until that tour, take care of yourself out there.
Thank you. Well, thanks again for having me.
Boom, people. Melinda Leslie, big thanks to her. You know, I like the episodes to be
pretty wildly varied, and this episode, along with last week's with Eve Lorgan, are a bit too similar, but that's nobody's fault but mine. This really was me trying to follow up on a lead from Robert Guffey. I thought we might get a little insight into these lesser-known companies that might be part of the agenda, maybe get deeper than what's commonly discussed on Coast to Coast and some of the surface programs that talk about this stuff all the time. But apparently, the things I wanted to follow up on most were kind of old news. But there were some insights about why these things occur and where pockets of the shadow state might be in carrying out this partnered agenda. Sometimes I do get critics that say all I do is plug books, but it's hard to get into the level of depth that I like to when a guest hasn't written a ton of material that I can comb through. Those details are always nice. What sort of technology are people seeing? How are they interacting with it? What imagery and messages are people being given? You know, I would have liked to dig into those areas a little bit deeper as much as possible. In the Plus show, we did talk largely about Melinda's own personal experience with both types of phenomenon, as well as her penchant for contacting spirit guides and how those two things might intersect. It's always great to hear the details of personal accounts and try to flesh out some of the big picture, so I do appreciate her going through that for us. I do worry parts of the episode were a bit too introductory for you guys. This isn't the first time you've heard of the Millabs experience, and you're definitely not new to the ET abduction phenomenon, but I hope we got beyond the basics enough to keep you interested. It's hard to get answers sometimes because nobody really knows much more than the basics on subjects of such high secrecy. I mean, Melinda's someone who researches this stuff intensely, has interviewed tons of experiencers, and she's given us all she knows. Surprise, surprise, humanoid beings taking people in the night is something that's hard to get a lot of details on. And again, I respect the work Melinda has done and her opinions, but I don't think you can take any comments about UFO disclosure from Hillary Clinton seriously. I don't consider her to be on team people in any sense of the word, and I would never suggest that getting her in office would do anything good for us, especially not the revealing of secrets that are decades old, unless, of course, they were stored on her private internet server. And you did get a taste of some of the material in tomorrow's show with Gordon when I asked about disclosure or technological rollout indicators like the Trans-Pacific Partnership. I think that's really smart thinking on Gordon's part, and we'll get deeper into that in the next show. It was also nice to have Melinda bring up Corey Good's name in this episode. A lot of people have written me and asked why I haven't had him on, especially when the inner earth is such a big part of his thing. I just don't know if I trust his story. We have a lot of people come out on the conspiracy stage and talk about their wild tales. Corey Good, Donald Marshall, Captain K, Andy Bisaggio. I don't really trust these guys. Their stories are too sensational, unverifiable. And yeah, sometimes they make for a good THC. I won't deny that that's a part of our roster here. But they're not usually my favorite episodes. And I'm realizing I'm better off with in-depth researchers and authors that I respect and find to be logical and intelligent rather than sensational and over the top. So that's where my head's been at in picking the guests for June. I think that's what worked so well for us in April. And I think you'll be pretty happy. But Melinda's tours are another thing. I haven't been out with her personally, but I've done the exact same thing twice, and it is really interesting. I actually think it's less impressive than I expected, but there's no doubt little points of light that do right angle turns, move back and forth, change speed and direction, but they're so small, you can't tell if they're really just points of light or some type of craft. I mean, an airplane at night looks like a point of light, especially the higher up it is, but something's clearly there. Maybe it's the Archon's maintenance crew, but the fact that they have a near perfect sighting record tells you that it's something that's always up there, and that in itself is something to walk away pondering. And treat yourself to the experience if you get the chance. Why would you not? But that is it for me. You're getting two more shows in the next 5 days. We had scheduling issues, so I'm all backed up, but I'm hitting you with a flood of THC episodes, so brace yourself. Until then, your move, corporate alien cooperators and abduction overseers, your fucking move.
Woke up this morning with light in my eyes, and then realized it was dark outside. It was light coming down from the sky. I don't know who or why. Must be those strangers that come every night, whose saucer-shaped light put people uptight. Leave blue-green footprints that glow in the dark. I hope they get home all right. Hey, Mr. Spaceman, won't you please take me along? I won't do anything wrong. Hey, Mr. Spaceman, won't you please take me along the higher side? Woke up this morning, I was feeling quite weird. I had flies in my beard, my toothpaste was smeared. I opened my window, they'd written my name. Said, so long, we'll see you again. Hey, Mr. Spaceman, won't you please take me along? I won't do anything wrong. Hey, Mr. Spaceman, won't you please take me along the high side? Hey, Mr. Spaceman, won't you please take me along? I won't do anything wrong. Won't you please take me along the high side?